Josiah, the last good king, who began to reign at about the age of 8, and I think it was about 16 when he began to seek after Jehovah, and he began to destroy the idols in Judah. He was doing the external work while Jeremiah was working on the heart. I think the reason that Jeremiah doesn't say any more than he does about Josiah is that he knew the hearts of the people were so turned away from God that Josiah's reformatory work was not going to be successful. That is, he was tearing down the idols and tearing down the altars. He was tearing down these things, but that didn't change the hearts of the people. Jeremiah was working on the heart. What? Now, if we should start today, as they did many times back in the Dark Ages, we were to try to start a reformation in this country by tearing down the churches, let's say the Catholic Church and their idols, their images they have there, that wouldn't change a thing in the world. Where you've got to work is where Jeremiah was working. That's on the heart of the people. The external things, they don't change the internal. Or they may make you stop and think, but they don't really change it. So that's what I want us to see. Now, Josiah, I'm not going into his work. He was a great man, the last good king they ever had. He was killed, and I'll get to some dates in a moment. But he reigned, I think, some 30 years or more, a good long time. Jeremiah prophesied for about 40 or more. Now, just a few dates, they may not mean much to you, but they'll help in this relationship. Now, let's look over, first of all, let's look over in Babylonia. Now, in Babylonia, King Nabopolassar came to the throne, and there began a war between the Babylonians and the Assyrians. In 612, Nebuchadnezzar, the son of Nabopolassar, destroyed Nineveh. That brought the Assyrian power to an end, as 612. All right? Jeremiah began to prophesy about 626. That, you see, is several years before that. But in Jeremiah's prophecy, God told him that the Chaldeans would be the ones to destroy them. Well, Isaiah had already said that, so had Micah. We've had that before. Both of them said Babylon would be the one that would capture Jerusalem. But at any rate, while Josiah, the good king, was tearing down the altars and the idols of the pagan religion among them, Jeremiah was preaching to the people back to God. Stand in the ways and see and ask for the old paths. Where's the good way? And walk therein, and you shall find rest in your souls. But they said, we will not walk therein. That's one of my favorite passages, Jeremiah 6, not verse 16. But at any rate, he was doing his very best. Sometimes they call the weeping prophet. He wept, yes, he wept for his people. But he was a bold, courageous man. He wasn't a sissy by any stretch of the imagination. He wasn't an effeminate individual. He was a strong character. You learn to love him. I think you will appreciate him very much. All right? Now then, that was 612. Nineveh fell. Right? Nebuchadnezzar pursued the Assyrians west as far as Carchemish and Haran. Right? And there he was in a battle with Carchemish about 609. Now, Pharaoh Necho, you see, we've got Egypt to the southwest. We've got Babylon to the northeast. And here's little Judah right in between there. Both of them are enemies of Judah. All right? Now, so when he had defeated Pharaoh Necho, came up there and to help to fight him for the Assyrians, against the Assyrians. All right? Now, Josiah, the king of Judah, met Necho's army up at Megiddo, that's to the north, in 609. He was killed in that battle. Had no business going up there. It wasn't his business. I don't know why he did it. My opinion is, he said, Babylon, he was going to fight for Babylon. Babylon would be better than Assyria as an enemy, but it turned out it wasn't any better. The people who went up there died to try to help by stopping Necho before he got up to Haran. But when Necho got up there, why, Nebuchadnezzar whipped him and then followed him on down into the south. And he came to Jerusalem and took Jerusalem, where I didn't have to have a battle, he succumbed to him. But at any rate, he then heard that his father was dead. That was 606. He learned his father was dead, so he made a rushed trip across the desert, the north end of the desert, back home to claim the throne. That was 605. Now he carried with him Daniel and Daniel's three friends, and so we got Daniel, so he prompted in Egypt. So anyway, we're trying to save the people, but he wouldn't listen to him. He tried to help Zedekiah. Oh, Zedekiah wouldn't listen to him. He came and asked him a question, but he wouldn't do what he said. He wanted Jeremiah to tell him what he wanted to hear. That class has been a problem with humanity all down since the Garden of Eden. Man wants a religion that will gratify his own desires, who will listen to him. In other words, he deifies himself. That always fails. Now, somebody asked me the other day, why did the Jews reject the religion of God all the time? First, because it was nothing you could see. Just an empty chest with some stones on, with a log on in a room there. They wanted a religion, a God you could see. Second, they wanted a God that would gratify their desires, what they wanted. They wanted material things. Right? And they wanted something that was aesthetically beautiful, but that was all there was to it. They wanted the very thing that appealed to Eve in the Garden of Eden. That was a weakness all down through history. Still is. Right? The religion of Jesus Christ, why did they reject him? They rejected him because he didn't tell them what they wanted to hear. They rejected Jeremiah because he wouldn't tell them what they wanted to hear. They accepted other prophets who told them what they wanted to hear. And that's the thing that's always been and still is. Well, what do people listen to most of them? What they want to hear. Tell them what they want to hear, they'll listen to you. Tell them what they need to know, they won't listen anymore. So this is a problem all the way down through. All right. So Jeremiah is called to prophesy and a period of Hebrew history when the kings, after Josiah, were all wicked men. The people wanted to hear what they wanted to hear. They didn't want the religion of Jeremiah. That was too strict and stringent. Right? And so they wouldn't listen to him, and the city was destroyed, and they went into captivity in 586. So now Jeremiah is prophesying from 626 to 586, which is 20 years there, 40 years. Now, how much longer he lived after that? So he's in that 40-year period. Now, I think that's going to help you to understand, if we can remember that, the condition and all of that. That's going to help us to understand his preaching and understand his failure to move the people. There's a problem that I have with Jeremiah, and every time I've ever tried to teach it, I used to teach it in college, and that is, it's not chronological. Here you talk about a thing here, now here, next time you talk about something at another period, and that kind of keeps you confused sometimes. So I don't know why that he does that. He had his reason for it. We may discover some of it. But at any rate, it isn't chronological. And that's all. That's, to me, when I deal with a thing, I want to deal with it chronologically. I keep better in perspective. So that's the deal. All right, now turn with me to the book of Jeremiah. Let's get to this first chapter. Two or three things in it that I want to emphasize this morning, and one or two things that are very, very difficult. The words of Jeremiah, the son of Hilkiah, of the priests that were in Anathoth in the land of Benjamin. Now, Anathoth was about 2.5 miles northeast of Jerusalem. I put a little map on the board also, you know where Jerusalem is, but north end of the Dead Sea, out about 12 or 15 miles west. All right, now about 2.5 miles, just a little northeast, was this Anathoth. And that was one of the cities of the priests. Right? And he was of that particular city. Now, he doesn't say he was a priest, but we assume that he was a descendant of the priest. Now, notice, and to whom the word of Jehovah came in the days of Josiah, the son of Ammon. Ammon was the one that ruled for just a little while before Josiah did. Right? Josiah, the son of Ammon, king of Judah, in the 13th year of his reign. He came also in the days of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, unto the end of the 11th year of Zedekiah, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, unto the carrying away of Jerusalem captive in the 5th month. All right, now, so that gives you some of the kings, not all the kings, but those few kings, outstanding kings, who served at that time. Right, Jehoiakim and Zedekiah. Right, and they're carried away to Jerusalem captive in the 5th month. That would be in the 5th month of that 11th year of Zedekiah. Right. Now the word of Jehovah came unto me saying, now this is a problem that I don't have an answer for. I never have been able to really see through this. And with enough other scriptures to deal with it like a light. The word of Jehovah came unto me saying, before I formed thee in the belly, I knew thee, and before thou camest forth out of the womb, I sanctified thee. That is, I set you apart as the one that I was going to raise up and train to be a prophet. God speaking now. All right, now look a little further. I have appointed thee a prophet unto the nations. Now, that raises the question, does God see that and do that and plan the life of individuals in any way before they are born? I don't know. This is a matter I don't know. I know he did with Jeremiah. Jeremiah said it. Before they were formed in the belly, I knew thee. I sanctified thee from the time of the womb. In other words, from his very conception, God planned to make a prophet out of Jeremiah. He planned to make a preacher out of me. He planned to make something else out of you. I don't know. I don't know about that. So I leave that with God. If you know a passage, I'll throw light. I have other passages like little Samuel and others that were born like that. We have a number. I didn't go through and pick them all out, but there's a number like that. So I'm going to leave that for you to grapple with on yourself and on your part, because I don't think I'm much help to you. I that's been too big a problem to me. Then said I, Ah, Lord Jehovah, behold, I know not how to speak, for I'm a child. I'm a child when it comes to matters of this kind. He was about 20 at that time, I imagine. Maybe a little over 20, 22. Too young, he thought. But Jehovah said unto me, Say not, I'm a child, for to whomsoever I shall send thee, thou shalt go. Whatsoever I shall command thee, thou shalt speak. All right, now don't argue with God. Saint Moses made a similar thing. I'm not my words, which he shall speak in my name, I will require it of him, or as Peter quoted, I'll utterly destroy him from among the people. Right? So this is to be the characteristic, not just simply of Jesus, who fulfilled the passage in its ultimate completeness. For every prophet that God raised up would be his mouth. I will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak them. So the words of the prophets, and I mentioned last Sunday, some 2,000 times in the Old Testament, such expression as the word of Jehovah came to the prophet, or the prophet spake the word of Jehovah, or the prophet said, This is the word of Jehovah, on and on like that. I've never tried to make a number of all of the different ones, but it would be interesting. But that's God's prophet. All right, now Jesus came, and God gave him the final and complete message, which I want to deal with in a few Sundays. All right, so now then notice here, I'm going to set thee over the nations and over the kingdoms to pluck up and to break down. In what sense? In prophesying. You'll be the one, I put my words in your mouth and the bounds of the habitation. Who Who determines how long a nation's going to last? Who determines the boundaries of it? God does. Paul said that God does it. Look at the Old Testament over and over and over. He dealing with the little book of Nahum. That deals with one theme, and that's the destruction of Nineveh. And on we go there. All right? So, don't think for a moment that President Clinton is the final word in this nation, or that Bush was, or that any other of those fellows is, or ever will be. God has the final word in the destiny and the time of any nation's existence. We're so many prophecies. I've gone over many of them time after time, so you remember some of them. All right, now then. Moreover, the word of Jehovah came to me, saying, Jeremiah, what seest thou? And I said, I see a rod of an almond tree. All right. Then said Jehovah unto me, thou hast well said, for I watch over my word to perform it. Now, there's a play on words there that you don't get in the English. Now, this word here, the rod of an almond tree there is sheked, and this word, watch over my word, watch over is shaked. Sheked, shaked. Well, why the almond? The almond tree blossoms and blooms in its season. Never fails, does it? It doesn't. It always blossoms in season and then bloomed in season and all of that. All right? So just as the almond tree acts according to the seasons of it, my word is going to be just as true. The almond tree blooms at the right time. God ordained that in the beginning. That was his word. Now the word I'm going to speak now is just as true. Just as surely as in the realm of nature, nature follows the pattern that God ordained, just as surely his word is going to follow the pattern that God determines. So that's the point there. Now that's the first vision. He sees an almond rod. You remember, and I don't know why they'd select the almond, but there was an almond rod that Aaron took and laid up before the Ark of the Covenant, and the next morning it had the blossoms. Had buds and blossoms and ripe almonds on it. What was that to teach? Well, that I think was a sign to confirm the priesthood of Aaron and his family. Right now, he made a dead rod to blossom and bloom and bear fruit. What was God's assurance that Jesus Christ was the high priest after the order of Melchizedek? I'm going to preach on that in a few weeks. It was the making of a dead body to live. A dead body was made to live and sit at the right hand of God, bear the fruit of the ruler of the king over the universe. An interesting point. This used to be one of my points to Mormons when I used to talk to them. They said, no man take the honor to himself except he's called as was Aaron. Now I see, that's right. So Christ also glorified not himself. And the point was, neither did Joseph Smith glorify himself. I go, wait a minute, let's look at this. Here, God confirmed Aaron's appointment of priesthood by making a dead rod live, give buds, blossoms, and ripe almonds. That was a sign. God gave a sign for Christ. Here's a dead body in the tomb. He made that tomb to arise and go back to the Father. Now, these were confirmed by unanswerable signs. Where is the sign that God ever appointed Joe Smith? He died in the jail up in Illinois. That was a six-shooter, smoking six-shooter in his hand. They buried him. His tomb's still up there somewhere. Will be. It'll be called out of the grave. Right? So that's the point here now. Here this almond tree blooms. You see this almond tree here. Just as sure as it bears fruit in season, so my word is going to bear fruit in its season. That's a better way to say it. The almond tree bears fruit in its season. My word will bear fruit in its season. All right, now he moves to another one. And the word of Jehovah came unto me the second time, saying, what seest thou? And I said, I see a boiling cauldron, and the face thereof is from the north. Now here in the vision, try to see that. Here in the vision now, as he looks up toward the north, he sees a boiling cauldron poured over toward Judah, poured over toward the south. All right, now what does that signify? Now let's let him tell us. Then Jehovah said unto me, out of the north, evil arises, in that they have forsaken me, and have burned incense unto other gods, worship the gods of their own hands. Right? Now here's the thing that God holds against Judah. Here God had brought them out of Egypt. He led them through the wilderness. He gave them his laws at Mount Sinai. He brought them into the land of Canaan, gave them this land, drove out the Canaanites, did all of that, shown all the wonderful signs back. He fed them in the wilderness. Now, and he had given them victory after victory, but they turned away from him to empty idols, wood and stone. They couldn't hear, nor speak, nor see, and nor act or anything else. You had to carry them around, and you made them yourself. Notice, he worshipped the works of his own hands. Here a man makes his idol, then he worships the work of his own hands. We don't make the idols today, but what really is the real sin against the United States today? Worshipping that creation of his own hands. Built a great nation, great wealth and all that. That's become the object of worship. We worship a creature of our own hand. We want something we can see. Money, power, pleasure, whatever you want to call it. All right? Now then, now thou therefore. Now here, this is what's going to happen, Jeremiah. I'm going to bring these nations out of the north. They're going to come down here as a boiling cauldron, overwhelm Judah, and destroy the nation here. Carry it away. Now, here's your responsibility. Thou, therefore, gird up thy loins and arise and speak unto them all that I command thee. Be not dismayed at them, lest I dismay thee before them. Right, here's a prophet. His message is going to be a message of doom. Ezekiel's message was a message of doom. People today don't like to hear a message of doom. People want to hear what pleases them. Now, there is an extreme we go to in negative preaching. Let's balance it with positive preaching of God and his power and what he's going to do and the good, heaven and all that. But let's not refrain from speaking the message of doom. That is the judgment that's inevitable when people do what's wrong. Unbalanced preaching. When I taught students over at the college, I tried to impress that on them. Make your preaching, a balanced teaching. Don't get lopsided and get so sweet that honey drips out of your mouth and you just couldn't, your hands are sticky. You couldn't say, he that believeth not should be damned without grinning all over. I remember one little preacher I held a meeting with one time. Looks like he had a grin all the time. Everything had to be sweet and sticky. And I thought, well, I like a little of that, but I eat a little honey every morning nearly. I like it. But I sure would hate to live on it. Wouldn't you? Yeah, and I like a little vinegar on my spinach. I'd hate to live on vinegar. But I like a little balance to it. That's what I'm trying to say. A little balance there. Alright, for behold, I have made thee this day a fortified city and an iron pillar and brazen wall. A Roman peace over the world so it could travel. There was good roads to travel on. All things necessary for the carrying of the gospel had been done. And Jews were scattered all over the world. They built their synagogues in the major cities. You could always go to a synagogue and find a beginning point in preaching. So when you talk about all things in the fullness of the time, you're talking about God in his providence has now prepared for the coming of the Christ. It had been out of place before, but there's plenty of time now. Also, they couldn't crucify, they couldn't kill Jesus Christ till the word was finished, till the work was finished. When the work was finished, now then, they crucified him. He said, it is finished. God raised him from the dead and went back to heaven. He had done all that he could have. Now, my lesson tonight from Malachi, the last book of the Old Testament, the last word of God there, is the coming of John the Baptist to introduce the Christ. All right, now, why don't you have anything from Malachi to Matthew? Why didn't God speak? He had said everything in the world he could say to those people necessary to bring them back to him. He had said everything in the world necessary to point them to a Messiah to believe him when he should come. Well, that ain't no use to say anymore. He said it all. Now then, when the fullness of the time came, he came. And now then, when will God come to destroy and to bring the world to an end? When all that God has planned is done and executed, and the people are no more in need to preach, for nobody will listen to it anymore, bring it to an end. When the time comes, that is time for a final judgment, God will bring it to pass. It ain't quite ready yet. The world isn't, there's still enough salt left to preserve it. Wickedness isn't complete yet. I'll tell you, we're rushing toward it fast. Think about that. All right? So now he says here, and the people of the land, again, and they shall fight against thee, but they shall fight against thee, but they shall not prevail against thee, for I am with thee, saith Jehovah, to deliver thee. Now, before God sends him out to do his preaching, he instructs him, what, said, I'm going to tell you what to preach. You preach it, they'll be against you. The kings will be against you. The priests will be against you. Thus saith Jehovah, I remember for thee the kindness of thy youth, that the love of thine espousals, how thou wentest after me in the wilderness, in a land that was not sown, as a desert land. Israel was holiness unto Jehovah, the first fruits of his increase. All that devour him shall be held guilty. Evil shall come upon them, saith Jehovah. Now God looks back now to the time when he called Israel out of Egypt into the wilderness, and they gladly followed. They followed him gladly there and came on into the wilderness. God took care of them there in the wilderness. He wants them to remember that. What are you doing now? Go back to that beginning. Make them realize how it was back there at that time, what I did for you. All right? And Israel is holiness unto Jehovah. They're the first fruits of his increase. All right? Because then, from then on, when he brought them out, then he continued to increase that nation. Then he ultimately increased it all to all nations, to unto Christ. All right? Evil shall come upon them, saith Jehovah. Hear ye the word of Jehovah. Oh, how now then, that's God telling them what to do. Now, God, Jeremiah, you go and preach to them. Now, here's what he does. Hear ye the word of Jehovah, O house of Jacob, and all the families of the house of Israel. Thus saith Jehovah, what unrighteousness have your fathers found in me, that they are gone far from me, and have walked after vanity, and are become vain? Now, he's challenging them, first of all, what fault have you found in the way that I treated you? Now, before an individual leaves the Lord, goes back to the world, gives up and quits, you've got to stop and think. How has God treated me all my years? What do I have that God didn't provide? What do I have that God isn't the author of it somewhere back to nothing? The air that I breathe, the water that I drink, the food that I eat, clothes that I wear, house that I live in, all of that is a provision that God made through the natural world for me. The automobile I drive, out of material he made. I want to look at my spiritual life. What do I have in the way of faith or hope or love or anything that's worthwhile? It doesn't come from God. What has God done me to me that would cause me to leave him for an idol or to follow people, false religion? Something to think about, isn't it? I know it is. Just as these prophets, my people, their voice is just as practical and profitable today as it was when they spoke back yonder. Different covenant, yes. Principles don't change. They were trying to correct the people by doing what? Pointing them back to God. Now that's what preaching ought to do. Got to go out and telling a man what he ought to do to be saved. First, make him realize he's a sinner. How am I going to do that? By measuring him with God. Pointing God out to him. Point Christ out to him. Bring him to realize I am a sinner. I need salvation. So he preached God unto the people. All right, look a little further. Neither say they, where is Jehovah that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, that led us through the wilderness, through a land of deserts and of pits, through a land of drought and of shadow of death, through a land that none passed through, and where no man dwelt. Now, what they're saying, they don't remember that, then they're not even asking where he is. They're not looking for him. What they're doing is turning to the idols, their own creatures of their own hands, their own mate. And I brought you into a plentiful land. Now, though I brought you through that desert, and I fed you with manna, you remember, gave you water out of the rock and all that. I brought you into a plentiful land to eat the fruit thereof and the goodness thereof. But when you entered, you defiled my land and made my heritage an abomination. The priest said not, where is Jehovah? And they that handle the law knew me not. The rulers also transgressed against me, and the prophets prophesied by Baal and walked after things that do not profit. Here's what you've done. Here's what I've done for you. I brought you out of bondage. I brought you through the wilderness, provided for you in that. Brought you into a land over here, plenty, and gave it to you, a good land. Now then, what have you done? You've turned against me for other things. All right, think about that. I think that's a problem we face in this country today. God brought our ancestors over here, gave them this good land, and it was a good one, the best that he had left anywhere. Gave it to him, and what have we done with it? We just rejected him, and now then you can't even talk to him in a school building. You can't pray to him anymore. You can't even, his name is becoming anathema almost. Well, what's God going to do to a nation like that? Do exactly what he did right back on. He's going to destroy it. The judgment, final judgment doesn't come first. All right, Bill, that's a good place to leave the lesson. We'll start there next time with verse 9.